Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to the Shrimp and Sivrette Show, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Hey, hey, what do you say? Danny Sivrette, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Bob. How's it going?
It's good, man. Good to see you this week on the Shrimp and Sivrette Show, episode number 4. How was your week last week? Give me the scoop. What were you up to? What'd you get into? Did you get some golf in? How the things going there in London?
Yeah, I haven't done anything on ice yet. I've just been sort of looking for ice to grab for some of the young kids to develop prior to their training camps. But I did sneak in a couple rounds of golf. You'll be happy. I was an 81 on Wednesday and then an 80 on Thursday. It's coming down. I'm getting closer to you, buddy. What about you?
I don't know if I want that or not, buddy, because we're partnering up. I need you sandbagging a little bit. You know, if we're going to take on.
I can juice my cap a little.
Just Corey Sivrette, call him Junior, and Drew Doughty. We have a revenge match against these two. So I don't know if I really want you getting that. I want you, we want to get some okay. Candy off these boys.
Yeah. I'll three putt a little.
Let's remember the last time we played these boys. Danny and I was down in Florida and I flew up to play in the member guest. And I take full credit. I was doing some serious shit talking. And Doughts and Junior ended up having us. What were they? They had us like down 7 on the front nine. We were out. We were totally
And they can chirp too, which is the worst part about it. Like
they're witty. They were pretty. You know, we got a couple old guys with tails between our legs. We took the loss all right though.
Yeah.
Wasn't too bad. But
their chemistry is good. I think we have good chemistry, but they're always together. They're like Batman and Robin out there. Everything they do, right? So we maybe need to bring you over from Latvia and get our chemistry back, half full to QVD or something like that. But
let's go, buddy. Where are you playing at these days? Where's your home course?
Well, London Hunt Club, where our member guest was. I've just played there Wednesday, Thursday. The course is in pretty good shape. We had some rain last little while. So a lot of the courses were fairly wet. Our courses got pretty good drainage and built on sand. So it was good to get out there and whack it around a little. I was surprised at my scoring so far. Usually I peak, you know, in mid-July or something like that, but I've only played 3 rounds, 84, 81, 80. So trending the right way. But like you said, as we get closer to our match, I'll have to make sure I throw in a couple 90s there to get juice up my cap.
Attaboy. I appreciate that guy. Get that going.
What about you? You hitting many balls yet or what? You watch the PJ?
It's still a little cold. It's still a little cold here right now. So the golf is on. It's on ice. I'm not willing to go out there and freeze my ass off, to be honest with you right now. But I know I'm going to got a project coming out, an NFT project. I've been pretty focused on that and organizing all this content for this project. So this Space Force Hockey is the name of the project. We're launching it. So I've been really focused on that. And I've had some 3 skates, which have been great. The kids are starting to progress, which is awesome. We started these Monday skates about a month and a half ago. So I'm really starting to see the results in the kids. They look really good. The drills were running, you know, their footwork and stuff. So it's gratifying. Love it. And, you know, when I started the sessions out, I said, give me time and I'll show you what we can do. And the kids are starting to progress. So it's fun to watch. That's about it. No golf for me. Focus on the hockey projects. And I did watch yesterday. It was an awesome day. Got a chance to have some early games for me, you know, the 8:30, yeah, it was 8:30 our time here in Latvia. And then what was the next game? The next game was, I want to say.
It would've been 10:30 for you. We had a 1:30 and a 3:30 Eastern puck drop on Sunday.
Yeah. So that was nice. And then I tried, and then I had the golf in between Carolina and the Rangers game to watch the game. I was trying my hardest to stay up to watch the Oilers game. I just wasn't going to go to bed because the skate I had this morning was at 6:15 in the morning. So I figured just watch the Oilers game, go right to the rink, I'll fire it up. And I wind up passing out at like 3:30. So I didn't get a chance to make it to the game, but yeah, my week's been pretty packed, and it's, I've been excited to get back on this podcast with you and talk some hockey, talk some shop. And, but before we get there, I do want to talk about the PGA event. And, you know, as just athletes, like, you got to really feel for this Mito guy. I mean, what would your take on that? What'd you think?
Yeah. Young kid. I mean, I think that was just the nerves taking over it. I think just, you know, these pros, they hit so many balls over and over and over again that it's just so repetitive that it's almost automatic. Right. And you could see in his swing, I'm no swing guru, obviously, you know that, Rob, but, I know swing guru, but he looked really quick, like out of sorts, sort of. Right. And I think that's just nerves getting to you, knowing that, okay, I make par, I win this thing. Right. And you know how hard it is to sort of stand up there, you know, I know, to try to hit a ball where you're like, hey, this got to go in the middle. Right. You put so much pressure on yourself, your brain's, you know, probably thinking about everything. And it's not focusing on exactly what you need it to be doing. And unfortunately he fell in water and couldn't recover from there. But yeah, it was, I think that was his first PGA tournament. He's a pretty good ball striker. And I think, you know, he's going to be a player who wins a lot of tournaments. It's just unfortunate that, you know, we usually say you have to fail to succeed. And unfortunately he had to do that on the 72nd hole.
Felt bad for him. Felt terrible for him. Afterwards, they showed him in the 10. His head was in his head. I mean, just devastated. That's brutal. I felt horrible for him. That sucks. That last 18th hole, you know, the guy, the announcer's always, hindsight's always 20/20, you know, even doing the coaching stuff now with people's video, you always can say that, you know, shoulda, woulda, shoulda, coulda, but you know, it didn't make sense on the 18th hole. I don't know why he had driver in his hand, really. Didn't need to go for it. But anyways, I thought it was worth bringing it up, talking about it. It was actually, for me, it was exciting because it got more, that's why I was trying to get my gap, right? Like I had like an hour and a half to kill from the Carolina game to the Oilers game. They had some golf, and then the golf started winding down. It looked like that guy was going to win. I was like, man, I wish there was a playoff. And then I got my wish. So it was great, great for me. But,
well, you said you were going to try to pull an all-nighter. It sounds like you're somewhat like the Florida Panthers recently just came out that they were caught out in Tampa.
What's your take there? One of those things where you try to go back to what worked during the season, you know, maybe that's it. Maybe they try to clean up their act for the playoffs and they realize it wasn't working and go back to the well. Maybe that was the machine.
I don't know if it's, you don't know if it's true or not, but a couple of the players were caught out at a adult club late night in Tampa. But in the season, sometimes you go through, you know, like lulls and, you know, you're on a losing streak or something. And sometimes it is good to just, like we just said about golf, take your brain out of it. You know, you think so hard to try to do well that maybe it takes an afternoon at a pub, the whole team, and sort of clearing your heads. And then you end up coming back and usually things turn around, but playoffs maybe is a different time to try that. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think there's going to be anybody that's going to accept that and think it's okay. You know, this is such a window. It's a small window to focus. I could say from our experience, we didn't do it in that manner. But the thing is, we got our job done. We swept teams. And then in London, we had 10 days before the next series. So we kind of calculated those days and had some fun and then shut it off and got back to work. But in this scenario, in the middle of a round, it's bananas. It doesn't make any sense.
We don't know who, if it is true or which players, if they're, you know, maybe the Black Aces or actual rostered players, but do you think that sort of shows like the frustration in what's going on in Florida? They're the number one team in the regular season. They made some good pickups at the deadline, have an opportunity to win or at least get to the finals again, like they had years ago, but I don't know, maybe they're like, you know what, this is, we can't do anything. This is what we're going to do. And I don't know. Like,
yeah, it would be I'm a speculating, big sign obviously. Of immaturity, really. Like, that's a leadership thing. And that'd be tough if that's the case, right? You don't bail out because you never give up, you never quit. And that's a sign of that, to your point, you know, if they're frustration. Watching the series too, it does seem that way. It seems a little out of sorts, and it's an execution thing. I mean, Tampa's playing very well. It's what, you know, they are playing very well. They got some very good players, very deep.
Florida's PP is so dry too.
It's awful.
It's so dry right now.
Execution rate, and you know, we're going to get a chance today, and I'm going to pull up some clips for that and show what I saw. There's one trend to it that I found. That's what the clip's going to be about today. But watching the full package of the clips, the execution's horrible. And that's not my opinion. Watching the clips, the passes are off. You got a guy wind up for a one-timer. Everything's coming on his back foot. I used to do that to Dennis Weidman back in the London days, because he used to take every single time he gave it to me, he used to shoot it, but not in the playoffs. In the playoffs, you put it in the wheelhouse. You make sure you secure that puck, give the guy shooting the puck the best opportunity. You're watching these little things like that in this series, the execution's down. And then if there's a story coming out like this, like that's an unfocused group. They're not ready for the stage. I talked about it before the series. I thought they had a lot going for them. Totally flipped my opinion. It's sloppy. They're not there. They're far off. And I don't think, you know, we talk about that fail before you succeed. That's failing, like bringing your best to the table and not having it be enough. And then learning that there's another gear. That's where you can learn from something like that, from this kind of loss. But coming to the table unprepared, unready, you know, unprepared and sort of laying down in the middle of the series, that's a little bit different. That's not the same as like the Oilers stories from the 80s when they walked by the Islanders locker room. Everybody's got bags. They thought everybody was going to be popping champagne and going crazy. Everybody's in the locker room iced up and banged up and because the Islanders gave it everything they had. That's a different thing. The Oilers brought what they had.
And Tampa's, like, to your point, Tampa's been blocking a lot of shots. Like they, I think they got a pretty good scare in Toronto. There was a few games in that series that they didn't really show up. They ended up coming out obviously of the series victors, but they just seem to have everything going. Like Vasilevsky's back again. They're short up front. Guys are picking it up. Paul's playing well. Perry obviously is getting a bigger role, playing well. All their D are efficient, playing hard, blocking shots. Like there's
Charnick is standing out to me as like that heart and soul. He's eating pucks. He's playing super tough hockey. He's really
scored a good one. The other day.
Scored a nice goal. So their pieces are. And then did you see that? I think it was game two. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they started off in warmups. Pairs ripped one off the crossbar off his own head. And then Charnick took one in the face. And then like two or three other guys, there was like a one point Stamkos was coming out of the locker room. Another guy was going in. They were all from block shots and eating pucks. It's comical because we're not eating those pucks, but I thought it was, first of all, a sign of like the sacrifice and dedication that they got. But it was also humorous that it started off with Paris beaming himself in the head with a puck.
Would have been a muffin though. It shouldn't have been that hard.
It was a muffin too. It just hit the bar right. Like boom, hit him right in the side of the head.
No, but he's been good. You know, since his role has been more elevated, right? Like they're playing, I think 7D, 11 forwards, with Point being out, giving him some more room on the right side. And I think his numbers, minutes have gone up, and I think he's scored almost every game since that's happened. Right. So he's back to sort of the Corey Perry, we know, playing hard playoff hockey, but you know, they look like a team that's sort of poised and possessed to make a long run again. It'll just be interesting to see how far they can go.
But they had so much depth, and I think another pickup that, you know, who's playing a big factor, maybe not big on the points, but he seems to be there every night. And the guy that you know well is Patty Maroon. And he's been well there, been playing very good hockey for him in the sense of the role player and depth. You know, go down the list, the guys, Nick Paul, we talked about him before, but he's playing unbelievable. And I think I want to hear, you got a story about Patty Maroon. You want to tell us this story?
Just one? Just one.
I'm sure there's a whole chest full, but I think I want to hear the story about the trade story with Patty. Well,
first one, Patty's a great person, great character. You can see the charisma he has. The players in the dressing room love him. I remember this isn't the trade story. I'll get a little more sentimental one first out of the way before I
That's nice.
Tell the trade story, but I remember he had just left Edmonton, had a good season in Edmonton, and was looking for a contract as a free agent. And I remember sitting on my couch and get a phone call from him. And he just sort of wanted to, you know, talk hockey and air some things out, like, you know, get things off his chest. And I remember him sort of saying, like, he's looking for more, but nothing's out there right now. Like, the market's not what he wants it to be, right? And sort of laid out his options. And I just remember him saying, like, one of them is St. Louis. And I'm like, dude, why don't you do that? Like, you, like, we're retired at the time. I'm retired. Like, you, it's hard to make millions of dollars outside of hockey, right?
Yeah.
And especially being a hockey player that doesn't have a university degree or anything like that. So I just said to him, I remember saying, like, look, dude, I remember playing with him when he had his son Anthony, and it, obviously you have a daughter, I have kids as well. It mean the world to you, right? So I just remember saying to him, like, dude, you can be at home playing and your kid is going to school wearing your jersey that your dad plays in the NHL. Yeah. Like, how cool would that be? You know what I mean? Like, imagine little Pat Maroon at the age of 10 or 12, and you go home every night to your dad who's playing in the NHL on your hometown team. You know what I mean? Like, it, like, unbelievable opportunity. And he ended up choosing that, and obviously ended up scoring a huge goal for them to advance. And then they end up winning a Stanley Cup, like, almost Cinderella like story. But I have a lot of time for Patty. He's a great guy. We were actually together in Philadelphia with the Phantoms. He was drafted by Philly. I was traded to Philadelphia from Edmonton. And he had played in London. So I knew him from watching him with the Knights. Big body, grew up playing roller hockey, great hands, a little bit heavier footed, plays a heavy game, would fight. And I remember him being on our power play. I'm like, this guy's so good down low, right? Like, net front, big body, recovers pucks. He protects it down low really well. He's a big part of like, when I'm on the ice on a power play, I'm like, that's, you know, puck recoveries are massive, right?
Yeah.
So we had a pretty good year. We had some fun times, and then I went into free. I had a pretty good year with Philadelphia, and I got hurt. So I ended up, they didn't re-sign me in the off season. And so I ended up signing in Anaheim. So signed in Anaheim. I started the year in your backyard in Syracuse.
Syracuse,
I think the Spaghetti Factory. Is that still?
Yes. Spaghetti Factory is unbelievable. Yeah.
I end up starting in Syracuse in the minors for Anaheim. And we're about, I think, 9 or 10 games in, or maybe not even. Yeah. 9 or 10 games in. And again, I get a phone call from Patty, and he's like, hey, I'm done. My career's done. And he's like all emotional and, you know, a big teddy bear. I'm like, what do you mean you're done? Like, he's like, man, I'm done. Like, Philly sent me home. I'm looking up his stats. I think he played, I don't know, 6 games, had 10 points or something, way above everyone else. And I'm thinking, like, what happened here? Like, what do you mean you're going home? He's like, man, I'm at my house in St. Louis. Like, they sent me home. Like, I'm on my couch. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So I end up, I'm like, okay, let me see if I can help. Right. So I end up calling David McNabb, the assistant GM at the time with the Ducks. I think he's senior VP or something with the Ducks now, but usually the assistant GM is the one that takes control of the AHL team, right? Serving as a GM. So I call him up. I'm new to the organization, but I'm like, you know what? There's an opportunity here to get this guy. He's a good player. Right. So I go to bat for Patty, right? I say, you know, he's somehow has a bad reputation. It's not deserving. He's a good character guy. The guys love him in the room, competes like hell. Like, as you can see now in the NHL, like, guys love him. He's on, you know, anytime the camera's on him, he's always doing something either to irritate, or he's a very serviceable player in the NHL. But at the time, he's not even good enough to play in the A, right? So I end up calling Dave McNabb. We have a good conversation. I just sort of said, like, man, this guy's at home. Like, Philly said enough. You're done. Just go home. Like, you can get him. You know, and I'm backing him, saying he's a good player. So this process goes on for a little while, and Patty's keeping me in the loop, you know, via his agent. He's texting me, you know, man, I think Anaheim's talking to him. And I'm like, that's awesome. Like, we could use you, right? Like, I'm playing in the minors, so I wanna win. And I think bringing him in is going to help our teams, right? So I'm in my head, I'm like, let's like get this guy here. Like, not, you know, selfishly, I'm thinking I want this guy on our team to make our power play better, right?
And so
we're obviously it's probably 2 weeks in, and then he texts me and he's like, hey man, I think it's done. I think I'm coming. And I'm like, for real? He's like, yeah, man, I think I'm coming to the Ducks. So I'm like, this is sick, right? So I go to, at the time I'm rooming with Brett Festerling in the minors, you usually share an apartment just because no one has a family and you're younger guys are cutting costs in half. So I'm sharing a condo with Brett Festerling and go to bed, wake up in the morning to my BlackBerry Curve or Pearl or something, World Edition. I don't know which one I had, but wake up to it. And it's an incoming call from Paul Holmgren. Like, I'm one of those guys that saves every number in my phone. Like, if you've messaged me, called me, whatever, it's saved, right? Paul Holmgren, Philadelphia Flyers, and his number. I'm like, hello? He's like, hey, Danny, it's Paul Holmgren. We just traded for you. And I'm like, no way. In my head, I'm like, this is not real. And I'm like, for Patty? He's like, yeah, we traded you for Patty Maroon. And I was like, and he's like, so, you know, no, I'll see you tomorrow or whatever. And in my head, I'm like, I just fucking orchestrated my own trade.
Yeah.
Like,
shot yourself in the foot.
I just traded myself, right? So that's my Patty Maroon story with trading myself for him, which I went back to Philly, who didn't re-sign me and then traded an asset for me, whether they didn't want Patty and didn't want me.
They didn't re-sign you?
No, they didn't re-sign. So I had an opportunity to re-sign with Philly and they opted not to.
Yeah.
And then so I walked and went and signed in Anaheim. Like, I didn't sign a one-way or anything. I just said, you know, your standard two-way contract. And then 10 games into the, at the time it was probably like 18, 20 games that had gone by, but I had essentially traded myself back to Philly for Patty.
So they got rid of, so they could have got you just to sign you back. And you said they got rid of a piece for you. So they ended up, you know, made no sense. 20 games in, what changed, you know? What changed?
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
what changed in your game over?
I know. I haven't talked to anyone in 20 Anaheim. Games. I haven't talked to anyone in Anaheim since then, but I was like, guys, really? Like, I'm trying to help the team and you're chipping me out for what I think is going to help our team, right?
Yeah.
But anyways, it's sort of funny story because I don't know how often guys have actually orchestrated their own trade. Like, here I'm so happy for Patty, texted me like, man, I'm coming. Like, it's a pretty much a done deal. We're just figuring out the particulars. Then I wake up to a Paul Holmgren phone call like, hey Danny,
brutal,
welcome back.
Yeah, welcome. I'm sure you felt really welcome.
So I don't know if there's any other players that have orchestrated their own trade, but
I'm not sure many guys, to be honest with you, Danny, would do what you did. Most people are, you know, I could say it through my experience, pretty self-centered and wouldn't really do that for anybody else. So it's honorable what you did for Patty, which is great. It says a lot about your character, but there's not a lot of guys that would do that. I've actually gotten to a point in my career, I've asked someone to do it for me. It took a lot of swallowing, a lot of pride, and asked someone, and it was way out, far-fetched to be done. So it's amazing that you did that for Patty, and you probably did kickstart his career back into shape, to be honest with you. You know, that story getting him going there and melting on his couch. I mean, he's playing all the time right now, and he's still a bit heavy, so I can't imagine him a year on the couch if he could have ever come back from
that.
You
figure three Stanley Cup wins, like, maybe toss me an invite to one of the parties.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, so maybe if he gets four in a row, you know, I know he's got my number. So, hey, Patty.
Yeah, but therapy's out, buddy. You got what you needed, buddy. Just go ahead and graduate on to the Stanley Cups. So, anybody else out there that's got issues, call Danny Subrette. You want to make
no, I think, cups. But I think we've touched on it also in a previous episode about just caring for your teammates too, right? Like, I think if you're a good guy, cares for one another, you things, good things will eventually happen. You, like you said, there are some players that you've come along or come through, and, you know, whether they're selfish or deemed selfish, and, you know, sometimes they get things in the short term that maybe you don't. And then I guess maybe the other thing, this isn't my bringing it to the table aspect, but just the misunderstanding of a player, maybe, right? Like I know I got it throughout my career, like when we were playing together in Edmonton, or in the minors in Edmonton. And Spring I know
Vegas.
You, yeah, I know you got it a little bit as well. And like, and Patty would have got it in Philly, right? Where, you know, they've sort of given up on him, whether it's they don't know how to connect with him, or they're trying to change him into a player he's not, which, you know, maybe that was an issue with coaches to you. Like, you have a skill set. Allow the player to excel with their own skill set. Don't try to convert them into a player that they're not, you know? Like, yes, there's elements to add to a player to help him succeed, but don't just try to strip him down to a blank canvas and be like, this is how you need to play. Like, I've gotten here somehow, right? So let me shine my skill and creativity, or whatever talents and abilities that you bring through, and complement it, right? Don't just, this guy doesn't fit our mold. So, and you can almost go into a bit of a tangent on, you know, the Kane issue. Like, I know he had some off ice issues not in San Antonio, or sorry, in San Jose, but here's a guy that is in Edmonton. He can play up to speed with McDavid and Draisaitl. He plays hard. He's a good player. Like, he's showing that he deserves to play in the NHL, but at some point it was like, you know what, he's not good enough for us, right? So it's an interesting take on how, you know, whether coaches or organizations have, and his maybe is a little different story, but I know for myself and for you, you can probably elaborate on it a little more for yourself or for me, but I just feel that there's at times, you know, you're dealing with 25 different bodies and characters and skill sets, and not everyone can be molded out of the same piece of clay, you know?
But I think the thing with the mold piece, and that is the play. It's basically you make it into like a robotic sort of thing. Everybody fits that piece, and the piece that they want fit, or the piece that they want to their team, has been the same piece over long period of years, like the 80s and 90s. And this is what it was like then, and then, and then. It's always like that piece has got to go here. So there's not a lot of room for creativity. And I think it makes it simpler when you have, let's say, as a coach, a blueprint that was passed on to you to be a coach. Those pieces have to fit into that blueprint. Now, if you have things that don't fit that mold, it's easier to just be like, nope, doesn't work. It's not going to fit. Go away. Versus being like, wait a minute, how else could I use that piece? And have a little creativity. And also, you know, I think having, as a coach, having, I don't say experience, but different experiences. And I say that from point of view of like now coming over to Europe, playing in Europe, realizing that there's other types of hockey, you know what I mean? And different ways to do things. Not to say everybody should come to Europe before they coach in the NHL, but my point being is like having different views of things, not just that blueprint of it's supposed to be this way and this is how it's going to be. And I think I had a kind of a Twitter thing the other day with, I love a guy, Mike McKenna, an old teammate of mine. He's an awesome dude. And his old coach would say something along the lines of, do it, you know, because I said so, or that's the way it's supposed to be done. It's a little bit different now. Like, even we go to individual working with players, players want to know why. And you as a coach have to give them every detail of why. And you have to know all that. And you have to be able to explain that. Now, as a coach, going back to the coach side of it, if there's a player that makes you have to like question or like think or change things around a little bit, it flusters them. So it's easier to just shut the door. And I think that's what, you know, maybe at least from my experience in the game, that was it. I was not a cookie cutter player. I'm not a cookie cutter person. I come in the room, you know, I like to have fun and make people laugh and be a little bit, you know, not your normal guy, you know, not like we're totally different people. And we're really good friends. You're not the same as me. Don't have to be. We can go out and still both be very effective for a hockey team though. So it's something along those lines. That's what I think, at least. That's my opinion on it with that. Like, some players get the door closed on them, and it's easier just to be like, nope, next, and bring in something that fits into the mold perfectly. Okay, my blueprint's good. We're ready. Now I can coach a team. It's less difficult. It's easier. So
yeah. So speaking to that, like that runs perfectly into our bring it to the table segment. Mine was actually on coaches adjustment. So you could almost hybrid. I was bringing it into coaches adjustments in a series tactically, but you can carry over the same thing with a player, right? Like, you know, square peg round hole doesn't fit. Not good for me, but I think the best coaches are the ones that can evolve with what you have, right? Like if you can find a way to get the skill set out of a player, and maybe that means altering, you know, if you have a group of D that are big lumbering D, you're not going to be a team that plays high pace up in the rush. If you got a group of D that can move well, you're going to try to have four guys up in the rush all the time, right? And like you said, like there's no blueprint to success. And I almost want to question right now with what's going on with Edmonton and Calgary. I think Edmonton's an awesome team. Like I love Sutter. I love listening to him after games. Like, you know, he just seems like a guy that everyone in the locker room is going to play for, right? Like he's so blue collar. And Edmonton's running that super line over and over and over again, right? Like, I don't know how long that'll last for, but as of right now, like McDavid's way above everyone on plus minus points. He's putting on quite a show and display, but he's also got two other line mates that are stellar as well. Right.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder if the stubbornness maybe in a coach maybe doesn't allow you to beat a team in a series. Like it's one thing in a regular season when the season's long and played out and, you know, you're just sort of sticking to your system. But when you get to a series, you have seven games to beat the team. It's a fast game of chess. So who you make this move, we make this move. And Edmonton's been making some moves, changing the lineup and everything. And Calgary hasn't really countered, or not that I know of. So I'm almost wondering if you think, you know, you can go old school and put a good skating Dylan Dubé, who hasn't been as productive offensively in the playoffs, and just say, you know what, you're just going to skate with me. Like, you'd be in his back pocket the whole shift. Like, don't let him touch the puck. I don't care. We'll play 4-on-4. The rest of the guy, he's touching it.
The only thing I like that, obviously, that's where we came from in the sense of grew up. The only problem is like, we also got the hook, hold, and pull. Like, in today's game, it's, I don't know, how does the shadow work? That's remember, like, yeah, whenever the ref wasn't looking, you, we'll go back to our days, but I remember Presti just absolutely raking on Crosby and Dylan Hunter and Trevor Kell. Like, this guy, like, if we rewatched those Mem Cup games, like there was 15 penalties every shift, but we were shadowing Crosby. But in today's game, with the way that it is, like, you know, I don't know. Is it possible? Would be my question. Like, really, how would you, you can't box him out. You can't get in front of him. You can't deny him his space. You can't get in his way in the sense you can't deny him his ice. You can't do the rake stuff, put it in his hip and pull on him. Like, I like the idea. Then I started thinking about that. Like, how would you actually do it as a player? It's easy to do that. Again, in the older rules, it's simple. Like, okay, I don't have to worry about the puck. Nothing else matters. Just number 97. Perfect. I don't have to think. Take my brain out. Just bring my work ethic. But in today's game, without that ability, how would you do it?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, is it trial and error and see how it goes? I know St. Louis has made alterations to their team to play against Colorado. Like, Colorado is one of the highest offensive teams off the rush, and in a short period of time, they've converted their neutral zone forecheck into a 1-1-3. Right. And traditionally they're, you know, Berube is a 1-2-2 standard, whether it be aggressive or passive. And I guess to elaborate for anyone listening, a 1-1-2 or a 1-1-3, when we're describing it, it's like the opposite of soccer. I know in soccer, it's, you'd say a 4-3-3, and it's speaking from the back end out. In hockey, we speak using the first forechecker as the first number. So 1-1-3. Essentially, what St. Louis is doing is they're allowing their F1, their first guy, the one, to go in and force the puck and make it dictate which way the play is going to be going. And then their F2, which is the second guy, so the 1-1, the second one, he now just starts pressuring wherever the puck is, sort of in the neutral zone before the red line. And then the three is one of the forwards have now sagged back and been in line with the two defensemen. So you're pretty much man on man on the opposition's left wing, center, right wing with a back pressuring forward. So you're not allowing them to get any odd man rushes. If anything, they're going to be 3 versus 4 almost with the back pressure coming. So that they've changed their system to prevent Colorado from any rush chances, because they're a great team off the rush, and it's been working for them. Obviously, they're still in the series. Like I know Sutter had said, it's, you know, it'd be the quickest 7 days or whatever, four games and
8 days
out when you're playing Colorado. But there's a team that's made adjustments, and I know Tampa plays a similar, not to get too in depth in systems and everything, but I know Tampa plays like a 1-3-1. So how I just described the 1-1-3, the 1-3-1 is the first guy, F1, is like extremely passive. And he's just serving as a guy that wants to wedge the play one way or the other, right? So they don't have full range of ice to come up. And then the 3, again, this is a defenseman that now moves up to be with two forwards in the middle row. So it's a 1-3, and then the other one is your defenseman who sags back. And again, the 3 across works the same as filling a lane, and you pick up and obviously you're almost man-on-man again with their left wing, center, right wing, but then you also have a safety valve defenseman back there. So you're enticing the team or forcing the team to dump the puck, and then you already have a D waiting back there that's going to go back and scoop it up, right? So just teams making adjustments throughout the playoffs. And I just don't know if maybe some coaches are maybe too old school and you know, stubborn to make those changes. Like what
we talked about it. I think we talked about it briefly. I don't even, maybe it was episode 1, talking about having different variations. I think it was when I was talking about the drop pass breakout and having different systems in place. So, you know, if you go down 1 or 2 times, you change up. I think that's important too with this sort of stuff is through the course of your season investing in this stuff, because it's one thing, you know, to say like, hey, you should switch your system up. But if you haven't done it all year long, you also don't, I mean, you get one day between games, you don't have time to get everybody on board. If they haven't done the 1-3-1 all year or the 1-1-3 all year, you've been stuck. So it's, I think my point being is it's important as a coach to have that sort of game plan through the course of the year of introduction of new systems, whether you're pro or whether you're peewee. Same thing, you know, teaching the kids or teaching the pros new things through the course of the year, just in case you run into these things. You know, again, during the regular season, you don't know who you're going to face in the playoffs at all until, you know, whatever, 10 games left in the season or 5 games left in the season. So having these things ready for the players and having the players ready, I think is super important through the course of your season. So you can switch on a dime, because the way you put it, Dan, like, you know, systems so well, I understand systems very well. And if a coach were to tell us, even in our old retired asses, we were out there playing, if they told us to switch from a 1-2-2 to a 1-3-1, we would know exactly what to do. Okay, who's the guy up? Left D? Okay, perfect. So now I'm the retriever. I'm the right D. I'm the retriever. You know, whatever. We could swing it, no problem. You would be prepared to do it. So anyways, point being is making sure through the course of the year as coaches, you have game plans and what part of your season you would implement something like this. Having your season organized, it's, I think you and I, Danny, were talking about this like a year ago, like how would you teach it? And you would almost teach it in like quarters, like the first quarter would be D zone, most important, just teach D zone. And then it would be D zone structures. And then it would go to the neutral zone in quarter 2. And then it would go into forechecks in quarter 3. And then it'd be all encompassing at the end of it, like power play, everything. And we're talking about youth hockey stuff, but how do you teach them the full game? And in pro, you can obviously expedite that time frame. You know, you can start in training camp. First 4 days of training camp are going to be D zone. First, the next 4 days, this, the next 4 days, that. And then kind of organize it and have a game plan for so your team can shift. And as much as you put into it as a coach, and as much thought you put into it, and as much as you invest in it, and then again, plan it out for the players, organize your soldiers, then that's how well prepared they'll be at the moment when you as a coach, you know, that's the thing, pressure. There's so much pressure on coaches because when stuff like this happens, if you're prepared to make a switch, you can just turn the switch. But if you're not prepared to make that switch and you know that your soldiers aren't ready for that, you're not going to go from, you know, airstrike to ground combat if you don't feel like you have guys that could be boots on the ground.
Okay, let me ask you another one then. So the way it is right now, there's you just said, like, if it's not working for the coach, it's easier to get rid of the coach than it is to get rid of the guy who's under contract for 7 years that isn't working, right? We'll find a new coach, right? So the coaching carousel is always turning. And it's almost like recycling bin, right? Because this coach goes from here to here, whatever. And like, and the game of hockey is evolving. And, you know, I think Montreal is one of the only teams that I know that went out of the box and grabbed a player who obviously was an exceptional player in Marty St. Louis to be a coach with minimal to no actual like junior coaching, pro coaching experience.
Connecticut Rangers, coaching U12 or U13 Connecticut Rangers.
But obviously knows the game well, like most players. And I think his personality, you could just sort of see it. He allowed the young players to, you know, have fun again. And you're in last place and they're going out and still having fun at practice and game. And it you know, they kept winning because of it. What's your thoughts on the recycling bin of coaches sort of just hopping from team to team? Versus sort of bringing in a new mind or someone that maybe will think differently and hasn't been anywhere to prove it, but let's see what you got, right? Like, does that open up the door?
I can't wrap my head around it, really. Personally, I don't get it. I really don't. I don't have the answers, and I don't know why it is. It goes round and around too. And it does. And I good for the guys that keep getting rehired. I guess that experience goes a ton away. I just don't understand how you can have a team in the show that is absolutely at wit's end and there's no coming back and this team can't be saved. And there's these scenarios where it happens. The teams absolutely stink and the fire coach, they bring in somebody new and there's like the spring of life. And then like 3 weeks later, or maybe 3 months later, that coach that got fired is going back into a situation. You're like, I don't know. If I'm an owner, I don't know if I'll ever have, you know, $600 million to buy a team. Definitely not. But I think I would want something fresh again, the way the game's evolving, new era. You know, sometimes what's the expression? You can't teach an old dog new tricks. I think as this game evolves and as the game's coming to change in totally, it's night and day from what it was. Watching Dennis Potvin's break Bobby Orr's points record just today on social media with the goal that was scored, and there was somebody kind of chirping about it. But the game has totally changed, and I think I would be looking for that new spring of life that's coming up with this group, with this generation of players.
The players are going back. Like,
they're totally different.
You know how many coaches we had that were hard asses. Like, you can't be a hard ass now. You have, like you said, the players want to know why. You have to educate them and each
why
player.
Not, though? That's the other thing too, Dan. Like, when the player says why, like the old school mentality is like, you effing punk, you shut your mouth, get in line. It's like, man, I don't never understood that. Cause I always had why. I really do. Cause you know why? Cause I want to dominate. I want to know exactly why, what is the details? Maybe my tone as a player used to be off. Cause I'd be like, why, you know, a little bit, I guess tone is a big thing. I've learned that in my life. My tone does suck. But whenever you ask questions of a why, you're a punk. What do you mean? If you were like in any other job, you ask why and ask for details so you can be the best at your job. Usually the management people teach you. So then you succeed and then the company succeeds. In this game, it was like, why is like such a bad question. Like, you're such a punk for saying why. But that's the old school mentality. Like you said, it's changing. Sorry to cut you off, but that is totally changing. And I think it's proper. Like, if players have a question, why, you as a coach, you're a mentor, you are a teacher. That's your job, is to pass on whatever knowledge you have up in that cranium of yours to the next. And if someone comes to you with a why, you should be happy. You should be honored that they would ask you why. so you can share everything you possibly can so that kid can go on and carry on. Like, that's mentorship. That's what coaching is.
Yeah.
It's no longer dictatorship.
Yeah. And I think going back to like what we were talking a little bit about, not understanding a player, right? Like, yeah. I can talk to Rob Shrem differently than I talk to Mark Mathot, than I talk to Dan Girardi. You know, like, I think that's what makes good coaches. I don't mean to go off on a tangent here. I know we were talking about coaches and alterations, but or adjustments, but I think nowadays the best coaches are ones that players want to play for. Like, I think you saw it a little bit in Tortorella. Like, he would be the hard ass, and he hybrided to players like playing for him. Like, even though he was still a hard ass, like he learned to modify the way he spoke to players. And I think it
from
was
from Tampa in the early 2000s to New York Rangers,
Columbus. Yeah.
In the 2000s, in the teens. I mean, Brandon Press was saying that everybody loved playing for him. The skill guys obviously had a little harder time because he was brash.
Demanding.
And you want that as a skill guys, you're used to that really super long rope. But
as a player, I really liked when we would do video, like you sort of said. Like, I wasn't that player that tried to question everything, like, oh, why are you doing this? But I like trying to poke holes and see how we would adjust. And I remember when we were in our last year when we played over in Germany, we had Rob Wilson as a coach, and we would do video. He was really receptive of me asking questions. So we would do video.
He was awesome. I liked Willie a lot.
Yeah. So I'd say, so what about, okay, well, if we send F1 down and what if they reverse it up the wall? Is that F2 going, or you want the D jump down the wall? Right. Like, little things that play out in the game all the time. I'm not trying to say I helped him, but I know now as a coach, when I'm teaching, there's so many variables and I enjoyed asking them and he enjoyed answering them, because everyone in the room is getting better. Cause you're like, okay, well then there's that part's covered. You know, what happens if they go D to D, and then who's taking the low centerman then? Is F3 now going down to the D to D guy, and F2 has to come over to take the center? Is F3 taking the low center, and we're just allowing that D man to walk up the weak side of the ice, and sort of that's their way out, right? Like, so things like that. Rob's I think coaching in Peterborough now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I really enjoyed those, like, you know, little brain sessions. And I think that's sort of what hybrided us into doing this, where we can sort of talk shop and break down clips. And, you know, there's some things that you say and do, and I would say the opposite, or why wouldn't you do this instead? And well, this is why. Like, your brain works differently than mine. And I think if everyone sort of collaborates together in a locker room, it is for the betterment of the team. And I think, again, going back to misunderstanding players, I think maybe there was times where I've had a lot of coaches, and I think there's maybe times that I had a coach that didn't understand my motives. Like, I want to win. I'm doing everything to help us win, and I want you to be the coach that helps us win too. Not going against you. I'm not rebelling or anything like that. Right.
That's the thing, Danny. If you don't know the why of this guy, where is he coming from? And the thing is, as a player, if you're a good player and you understand that you're a good chess player / hockey player, we talk about you playing a fast game of chess, and you see the commander making calls, that you're watching this thing four steps ahead, being like, this is not going to play out well, man. What the hell are you talking about? You do that and this happens. And then that. And then guess what? It's in the back of that, and you're going to be confused. Then you're going to be screaming at the wrong guy. In my mind, I get emotional about it or fired up about it. I'm like, you're a fucking idiot. Like, what are you doing? Like, and then what are you trying to, like, you want to know that person's motive, but it backfires to you. I never understood that for you as well. You're such a smart hockey mind, and I understand that, being in the locker room with you, played hockey with you, been friends with you a long time. It's always been that about the team. You were the captain of a very good hockey team, and the motives are to win. But that question of why would get you in trouble. It would be so defensive about that. You're a punk. Because the root of it is you want to win, and that's it. Let's talk tactics. And if you want to talk tactics for hours, Danny Sabret will talk tactics for hours, which is great, because you get all the solutions out there. Some people don't like that. Some people don't want to talk hockey for a couple hours, but anyways, sorry to go on a tangent, but it drives me nuts because that's the thing, as a good player and a hockey person, hockey brain, you again, if what the commander's saying doesn't add up and you're like, dude, we're going to walk right into a landmine if you tell us to keep going this route, and you're going to be like, why are we walking the landmine? And the answer is just shut the hell up and just do it. It's hard to eat that. And so maybe sometimes pride is too big.
Yeah. And I mean, that series, going back to that series, that the Calgary Edmonton series has been good. Like I obviously your favorite, I think you said, no, I think you opted not to pick a team because you're afraid.
I stayed neutral, man. I stayed Swiss.
Afraid of
2 years there, man.
Afraid of the Stampede and White Ave. I know, I get it. But I sort of sided with Calgary and I just wonder if that super line is just causing too much havoc on, like, they're matching. Obviously line matchups are big in the playoffs. McDavid's plus 16 and Lindholm's minus 7. There's, I think, the rest of the line, Toffoli's minus 7, Hanifin's minus 7. Like, those are big minuses in the playoffs.
Oh boy.
Right. McDavid is plus 16. He's like head and shoulders above everyone else. It's like, I know he's the best player in the world, but you got to try to find a way to stop him. Right. Like, I know it's a team game. Well, so he's going to be crowned the Stanley Cup champion. Like, someone's going to figure out a way. It's just a matter of doing it. But I know
there's other firepower. I think that's firepower.
Yeah, but there's things can be done. Like, you know, I mean, do you think way out of the box and go, you know what, we're going to address another D. We're going to go 11-7 and we'll play 2 forwards and 3 D against him. Right. Like, it's weird, different.
Which one, who,
you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm just thinking outside the box. Like, teams are altering their system 1-3-1, 1-1-3.
Dude, he just thinks inside that shape. He understands that shape. Get back to it. Keep saying it all the time. Who cares? The chessboard. He just sees every move, man. And he calculates it. He's so, the hit against the door off, like, man, what a play. Like, the way that he absorbed that hit, crossed his right leg. Like, he comes in, his right leg came over his left leg to support the hit, bounce off it perfectly, go in the direction, then be able to get out of it. Like, he is 3-4, sometimes 5 seconds ahead of the play. And then the fact of the matter is, none of these anticipating it in the sense of, like, where somebody else is going to, he sees it 5 seconds ahead, and then he goes and gets the puck and does it himself. It is insane what he does. Mm. And that's why I say it's so hard. Like, how do you stop it? Like, as soon as he gets it, he's already in small details. You break his game down. He's always shoulder checking, surveying the ice. You talk about that a lot with young kids. Check when someone else has the puck, start looking around. He's always surveying the ice. He's always 3-5 seconds ahead of everybody. I don't know, man. It's to your point, maybe 3 defensemen. I don't know, but I think somehow he comes up with the equation to that. In my opinion, he sees it.
Yeah. Or how else do you change the series? Where do you run the goalie?
Yeah. That's perfect. Right into my topic for the table today was what I want to talk about, was the goaltender interference. Goaltender interference in general. There's so much chatter about it, and there's so much, you know, back and forth and confusion and whatnot. And I think, you know, for me personally, there's a couple instances right away in the series, the Calgary Edmonton series, you know, the one where everybody's kind of there are people calling to change the rule because McDavid made a nice play, made a hard play, wasn't malicious, wasn't trying to take a goalie out, trying to dangle the defenseman, ran out of space, runs in the goalie, guy comes up, picks the rebound, scores. Like, everybody's saying that we got to make a rule alteration. Like, how do you make a rule alteration? In my opinion, what I want to say is, like, the goalies have to have some protection, man. Like, McDavid can fly. He can fly. And a lot of, and that's not just Connor McDavid, like the NHL in general, people can fly. If there is no blue paint barrier for them to somewhat hit the brakes, the goalies are going to get killed. Like, and it's dangerous. You're talking about coming in, crashing, banging the net with, like, you know, razor sharp blades on.
And more times than not, they're butterfly goalies. So you're just blowing a knee out in any type of rollback on, like, you're in a butterfly and get shoved back, like, your knee's just going to pop. Right. Like, yeah. I think that's what happened with Binnington. Right. So, yeah.
So and then, you know, then you have the goaltender interference. So I think my opinion, first of all, with the blue paint stuff, I think the goalies, that's their area. That's their protection, call it. And I don't think there's any way people should be talking about taking, in my opinion, away from the goalies.
So you're saying that the disallowed goal on, I don't know who scored it, but when McDavid drove the net, you're agreeing with the fact that it should be not allowed, correct?
100%.
Yeah. Like, I'm with you. No, I'm with you.
You open up that cat of, bag of worms, or you let that cat out of the bag, like, where's their protection? Like, everybody's just going to drive down the wall and run 90 degrees across the goal line. And, hey, run them. If I run them, I run them. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with your take there. And I was the same, like his path was going through the blue paint to begin with. And I know old school, it's like, yeah, drive the far post. Like, yeah, that would have been probably a goal a long time ago. But now, like you said, it was disallowed. What's your take on in game three, the Lucic, I know it was 4-0, the Lucic interaction with Smith.
That's where it comes into play. Now they're talking about goalie interference and then the goalie coming out of the net. So the blue paint, I'm a believer in them being protected. That's their space. You know, when they come out, though, my mind's a little bit all over on this one. I don't get it. Like, they're the most protected, and they come out and it's like, all hands off. Nope. You touch them, they're gonna like, what's the thing? Like, if you hit a goalie, just because they're a goalie, they're gonna crumble to pieces. I don't know why. Like, I understand in the paint, because then they're like just sitting there. They're in a butterfly, right? We start talking about blades coming by their neck. You start talking about blowing their knees out. They come out behind the net and they're standing straight up and they're like playing hockey with the puck. I don't know. I sometimes feel like, why can they do that?
Do you say fair play when you're outside the crease?
Hey man, calculate it. You want to come out and play it out of your protection, out of your safety. You're the only people that get safety nets on the ice. Nobody else on the ice is like, I got a blue paint around me. Stop. Do you, when you go back and somebody high flips it in your corner, you'd be like, nope, blue paint, stop. No. So fucking lights you up. You know, they come out and then it's like, oh, everybody sweep. So we have this instance where Lucic's puck comes in and, you know, what are you going to say to Lucic? Like, oh, you should have slowed up. Well, what happens if he kind of totally hits the brakes there, stops his momentum totally altogether in the play that happened? I think everyone knows what happened. And Smith plays it like he really, like Smith can. He's unbelievable playing the puck. He plays it. And now he burns Lucic with that breakout pass. And they go up the ice and they go down the ice. They go down the ice. They break out easy and they go out. Lucic is in shit for letting up. The coach is like, what are you doing? Play. Right? So he's got to come into that situation with speed. Smith doesn't wind up playing it. And there winds up being a collision. And it'll piss people off, I'm sure it will, but like, and I'm pulling for the Oilers to win the series. That was not an earth-shattering hit.
No.
Yeah. I just let the cat out of the bag on this.
Oh, okay.
Undercover. Yeah.
So you're back on White Ave. You just can't go back to this.
I just can't go Stampede. Shit. Hey, shush. Let that one slip. But come on, man. Watch that film. That's embellishment. And I'm not saying the ref should call embellishment, but everybody calling for like major penalties and like, you tried to kill him. And, you know, I will say when he ran Ryan Miller, he did that on purpose, but that was a long time ago. And that wasn't just the other day. So different scenario, different instance. This one, it was like, what else, what is he going to do there? Is he supposed to stop at the goal line and be like, okay, Smitty, what are you going to do with it? You're going to rim it? Oh, you're going to play it? Okay, now I can go again. Like, what is he supposed to do there? Really? So when they come out of that safety net, I don't know. I don't know how I feel. I think like you should be able to light them up.
I mean,
they got more pads on.
It's an interesting take. Like they obviously instituted the trapezoid rule so that goalies would stay out of the corner and not play as much. So if you do want to play it outside there, it's in the pucks on your stick, you know, 1-1000, 2-1000, maybe fair game. I don't know.
Heads up. Coming in hot.
The thing is that it's hard to find. Like Smith and I think Turco were two, or Smith is still probably the best at playing the puck. More hybrid now, goalies don't really do that as much. I think maybe the way that the rules have been instituted, it's prevented goalies from being, you know, puck handlers, but still on any rim, the goalie's going back and stopping it. Right. Like that's like that's the thing. When you're dumping the puck, you're dumping it for a purpose to get it back. And the goalie's trying to stop it behind the net to allow your D to just go back and scoop it. But
the other thing too, Danny, is like the back. So when you're coming at a certain angle on a forecheck, like let's say you're coming down the left side, the puck gets dumped and you're flying down the left side. You're trying to get on your horse because that's what we do now. We get on our horse, we sprint 100 miles an hour. And now the puck goes behind the net. You're coming on the left side. The goalie comes behind the net, stops it. And you don't know what the read is going to be. A lot of the times you use that behind the net. If he plays it up the right side, you use that behind the net as like a slingshot to get your momentum to keep you going, you know, get you back faster. They come out and stop that lane, totally clog it up. What are you supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Am I drawing a good proper picture?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Like you're just saying he's almost serving like a pick potentially, and you're serving just going to blow up his back shoulder and probably get five for charging, right?
You have to let off. And then that's like, so that's a, you know, chess match. That's a smart play, like by the goalie. So like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I think, you know, you can't run them from behind just because they're goalies, but you know, if you're coming down that left side, he's looking straight at you and he wants to stand in your way. I'm sure the goalies would be pissed about that. I don't, then get out of the way.
So you think somebody did his best Ric Flair impersonation?
I really do. You know, if he gets butthurt about it, that's too bad. But he really threw his head back and he sold it, and he really sold it. So I don't think it was a malicious thing. And I think I like Sutter's comments after. Yeah. I think if Lucic was going to light him up, this, you know, like, come on, this guy wouldn't be, he would have been on a stretcher, not going in the locker room and then getting a.
Yeah. No, I think
WWE,
I think
the entrance back in.
I think the call on the ice was just to settle the rest of the game. It's 4-0 with 11 minutes to go.
Yeah.
Like, clearly he didn't charge. There was goaltender contact. He has a history. He's a giant man. Like, you know,
yeah, who's going to settle that score?
You know, and a couple days before you saw Binnington out for the series, maybe the entire playoffs for a contact with him, right? Like it can change a series. So I'm not against the penalty call. I think if it's a 1-1 game in the third period, I don't know if that's the call. I think you're just trying to preserve the health of the players for the last 10 minutes, not allowing it to get idiotic out there. Right. Cause I mean, it is a series. Old school is, you know, you're down 4 goals with 10 minutes left. You're going to try to go hurt someone, you know,
kind of funny. Yeah. That's how they, well, that happened in Carolina. D'Angelo and Domi were swinging the twigs around at the end of the game, you know, but that's, it's interesting that they're putting a cap on it. I think it's very evident that they're putting a cap on it. I mean, maybe it's Captain Obvious to say that, but that was part of the entertainment a long time ago when our game was very barbaric. They would just be, those last 4 minutes would just be brawls, fights, scraps. As a fan, it's hard to see that stuff go because it's part of the DNA of what, you know, I'm not even saying like I'm a fighter. I just grew up with that game. I watched it. I loved every piece of it. You know, the scraps, the this shit show stuff that would happen at the end of, you know, game two. It happened. I always go back. Sorry, cut the cord. I'll never cut the cord. But the London Knights days when Mike Richards and Corey Perry squared up at center ice, it was unbelievably entertaining. It was sick, you know, because Richie kept doing that shit. He did it after game one. He like absolutely raked on Pears' back and Pears didn't do anything about it. And then I think this was game three, maybe. He did it again. They were down by, we were up by like 4 or 5 goals. No need for it. Richie did it again. And Pears called him out and went to center ice. And the fight was amazing. The fans were so into it. We were on the bench banging the twigs. Get on, Pears. You know, it was great. But I think it's, I say it from wearing two hats as a fan and someone that grew up with that, you kind of miss it. But also as somebody that's retired and seeing guys with head injuries and brain injuries and lingering effects from that barbaric game, it's actually nice to see. I think it's the proper thing to do to put a cap on that shit. As entertaining as it was, as it could be, guys, you know, 10 years down the road, not being able to do certain things in their life is probably, you know, they're not probably, it's way more beneficial to protect that.
No, I agree with you. Like I'm with you. The game's so fast. Like the only thing that can't evolve is your brain, right? And I think that's where a lot of concussion issues and everything are. Everyone's faster, stronger. The only thing that can't really grow is your brain, right? So I do believe in the health. Like at the end of the day, you know, their careers are getting shorter and shorter, so guys have the rest of their lives to live. But I mean it was entertaining. You know, you see some of these old classic games and you know, sometimes a big thing like that, whether it be a fight or a big hit like that, would change a series. But good. I liked your topic and theory on goaltender interference or the safety net around the blue paint, and, you know, potentially making it fair game if you're outside of it and handling the puck, like, risk yourself. Here you go, right? You got all the equipment on in the world. But no, it was an interesting take on that. Let's get down to the nitty gritty here, and let's cut some film up. Let's go.
Okay, for the clips today, what I got is some clips from the Florida Panthers power play, and the main focus on this is the top of the key, the quarterback of the power play. And inside of these clips, what I wanted to show was what I find to be a little bit of what Florida's doing wrong, and for the listeners to understand what exactly that top guy is looking to achieve, what his job is, and what to look for. So we go to this first clip. What I found here is Sasha Barkov. He's up on top of the key, and I feel it, what I'll say is the wrong parts. What Florida's doing right now is they're just rushing the puck, they're rushing the passes, and they're making passes just to make passes. Now, when you're the quarterback and you're the top guy up on the power play point, your job is to manipulate the box. And also what you're doing is you're manipulating at which angle you are going to attack the net, or your team's going to attack the net. So again, in this situation, what we got here is Barkov is up at the top. We can see that the Tampa Bay Lightning penalty killer is there, but it's token pressure. He's not jumping out at him. So what that means, when you're the top guy in the power play, if this guy is stopped and he's just standing, and he, again, what we call it is token pressure, he's not darting out at you, you want to take that guy and you want to drag him as much as you possibly can, so that the next pass that you make, you give your teammate that much extra time. And that's what this clip is going to diagram. If Sasha would pull this puck over further, he would pull Nick Paul from the Tampa Bay Lightning over further. And what that would do in return is give Huberdeau more time and space. So you can see what he does. He forces the pass, passes it just to pass it, versus passing Huberdeau a gift. And then what happens in this scenario is Paul gets to come back and be a factor on this play, versus if he had dragged him over two or three more strides, Huberdeau would be walking downhill and getting that shot off. And another thing, what I find with the Panthers power play, and what the problem is there's just the chemistry's off. And we'll watch as this play keeps playing out, comes back to Barkov. And now the goal line guy, which is Reinhart, he's in between. He doesn't know what to do. Again, for us to learn from this is, if you're the goal line guy, think about positioning yourself in an area to be a threat to the net. So in this situation, if Reinhart were to just stay put where he is, it would take a simple just shot tip pass down from Barkov, and he would have the goalie beat. So there's either that. You get two options there. As the goal line guy, you position yourself in a spot where, again, you make it hard. He has to have two points of attack to worry about. He's got to worry about Barkov walking down and ripping a bomb, or he's got to worry about this guy making a backdoor pass on you. So now the goalie doesn't know where to react to and what to think. In this situation, this guy is in between. The chemistry is off here. We're seeing it. The power play is super low percentage, and this is the sort of thing that's off, the chemistry. Reinhart is in between going and not going. He winds up going, and when he winds up going, it's right in the middle of the time when Barkov is shooting the puck. So now it's just super awkward. And if we pay attention right at the moment when Barkov gets this thing on net, and you were to stop and ask Reinhart, like, what were you actually going to do with this puck? If he tips it, he's standing right next to Vasilevsky. Like, where's it going to go in? Again, if we rewind it a couple seconds back, if Reinhart had stayed off the goalie, it would have given the goalie two points of attack on the net to worry about. So food for thought here on that clip, really important as the top guy on the PP. You want to stretch things out. You want to draw people with you to give the player that you're moving the puck to more time and space, a better opportunity, versus passing the puck just to pass the puck. Don't pass the puck just to pass the puck on the power play. Have a philosophy, and if you're the quarterback on it, that's your job. In the next clip, we're going to go same thing, Florida Panthers. Now we have Mackenzie Weegar up top here, and you will see I highlighted this space that he's in, and I highlighted the goalie. Those are the two things that we're trying to accomplish here. Using the space that's available to manipulate the goaltender. And in this clip, you can see the goaltender is got his eyes up, paying attention to what Uyghur's doing with the puck here. And he's aware of what he's planning on doing. If you're the top guy on the power play up there, you're trying to think of like, okay, I got all this time and space up here. How can I manipulate, again, the box and also the goaltender? So as I'm moving lateral, as I'm moving side to side, like I diagram in this clip, you're pulling people with you. But here in this situation, this is, again, just a pass to make a pass. This is like a, okay, the coach diagrammed it this way, so I'm going to do it how he asked me to diagram it. And watch what happens here. He just passes it. The goalie's got eyes on him, reads the whole play. And if you see this point, the point of contact on Bennett, look how square Vasilevsky is to this puck. So the top guy up there on the key was probably like, oh, I'm giving this guy wide open one time. He better score. When the truth of the matter is, Uyghur never looked at the net to see what the goalie saw and what was happening at the net. He just kept going from left to right with the puck, never seeing what's going on at the net, never manipulating that goaltender. And then when this puck gets down to that one-timer, again, here it is on contact. Look how square the goaltender is to this guy. So food for thought, when you have that much time and space up there, again, as the top on the point, the key of the power play, your job is to use that time and space to manipulate, pull the goalie with you, draw defending players with you to tee up the play that you're trying to make. When this pass comes over to Bennett, the goalie should be, I'd say, halfway on his way over to get to this spot to make the save. If you make this pass to your one-time flank and he looks up and the goalie's been square for 2 seconds, you made the wrong play. So just a little, some details here to learn from, and hopefully the Panthers can figure it out, get their power play clicking so their season doesn't come to an end in a quick minute. Danny, what do you got for us today?
Okay, for my clip, I just want to cue up a three-on-two opportunity or chance off the rush. And I think that there's an area that the younger players I see, whether I'm coaching or coaching against, I see everyone wants to be the third guy high. So a team will attack three-on-two, gain entry to the blue line, and someone will sag over and be the, I'm going to be the token high guy, when really the back checker will be the guy that ends up negating that opportunity. So in the clip here, I have Calgary going right to left on the attack against Edmonton. They have the puck in the center of the ice going through the neutral zone, clear cut 3-on-2. Johnny Gaudreau's on the bottom side of the screen running right to left with a ton of speed. And Tkachuk is at the top of the ice surface, a little bit ahead. So he's got to buy some time to make sure he stays on side, but he does a really good job of crossing the blue line at the same time as the puck and with speed. So what happens is Gaudreau gets kicked the puck down on the south side of the ice. He drives wide, bringing over Cody Ceci, which then opens up the middle of the ice. Gaudreau lays the puck through to the middle drive guy, who's driving hard through the middle of the ice, not pulling back, looking to be the high guy. Johnny makes a good pass. It forces Darnell Nurse to cover the entire area in the defensive zone on a 2-on-1. He opts to probably take the right decision and take the middle drive guy, but he had to make a decision. And the middle drive guy ends up making a really good touch pass to keep the puck going through to the weak side, where Tkachuk gets a really good scoring chance. But what this 3-on-2 did was it pulled the defenseman out of the middle of the ice to create now a 2-on-1. And because both players had speed in attacking the net, it made life really hard for Darnell Nurse to defend against. And I just wanted to touch on the fact that it wasn't a high guy sagging back, trying to get a drop pass, which can easily be picked up by a back checker. What it was three players driving hard to the net, a good passing option through to the middle drive guy. The middle drive guy ended up kicking it out to the weak side guy, and they got a really good scoring chance out of it just because all three guys drove hard to the net.
Sib, I want to ask on that. Why does CC come outside the dot line there? What could, I know you can't speak for him, but as a defenseman, I think you can answer the question. What's the point of coming out there? Cause in my mind, and again, you can check my dashes. I was usually a green jacket candidate every year, but for me, Johnny Gaudreau is 50 feet away from the net and he's in outside ice. Is there any reason for CC to come outside there? What's the point?
I can't speak for him. I'm just thinking that he might've thought that Tkachuk is out of the play and posted up on the far side of the ice. So now it almost turns into a 2-on-2. And then he sort of overplays Gaudreau against the wall, where it allows Gaudreau to slide the puck through to his middle drive centerman. And then Nurse does a decent job of coming over and taking away that immediate threat. But a really skilled play by the middle drive guy to just touch it, one touch it through or bypass it almost to Tkachuk driving through. But I'm not sure why, like, golden rule is to stay inside the dots. I think maybe he just had a maybe misread off the entry and thought it was a 2-on-2 and maybe respected Goudreau's speed a little bit too much on it. But either way, it's just a 3-on-2 middle drive where I say it all the time to my players. It's like when you're attacking, then everyone wants to be the high guy, right? Everyone wants to get the little drop pass and I'm going to walk in. But in reality, everyone back checks hard. The game is so fast now. You have to be able to middle drive, weak side drive, and one of the two guys will be a passing option for you, but you can't just sort of token take yourself out of the play and sag back to be that high guy, and you're just going to get absorbed by the back checker. You're just negating your 3-on-2, turning it into a 2-on-2. But in the clip, Calgary does a really good job of executing a fast-paced 3-on-2, and I think that's the way that Calgary plays, is with high energy and attacking the net. That's one of the best lines, I think, if not the best offensive line in the NHL. And it just shows to everyone that is watching or listening, it's just because there's obviously skill, but there's hard work there. No one's just a token. I'm going to be the late guy teaming up for one time, or like everyone's going with speed and forcing their creativity to excel through their speed.
Yeah. I think that's like, the thing is with the execution by Calgary on this clip, it's great. It's unbelievable. It's fast. It's executed very well. And the point being is that for if you're a defenseman like CeCe, be careful where you take your risk and you know what the point is. I think, like, again, to take a risk here and jump outside ice, you expose yourself. And for me, there's a moment in the clip around the 25 second mark where if I'm that left-handed forward, if I'm Johnny Gaudreau and you start coming out at me like that and your triangle's that exposed, I'm going to go through your triangle and cut you inside. And I'm going to go inside ice. In this play, Johnny makes a great pass and executes, but you also, by jumping outside the dots like that, you're exposing yourself to getting burned. Because the thing is, again, what is the reward? Okay. You might be able to stop this play up here. What's the risk? You either give up a 2-on-1 or you run the risk of being burned by a forward that has the ability. And in today's game, a lot of people do have the skating and hands ability to burn you. So it's kind of being a little bit more patience as a defenseman, backing up, and again, risk and reward, and also leaving a guy in non-deadly ice to cover the stuff that is deadly, which would be the center slash here, giving a little bit more support to Nurse, staying on the dot line, and then letting Draisaitl come back and be a factor in the play. Because the other thing is, at this level, right, the NHL level, if Gaudreau comes down and takes a shot from the wall and it goes in, that's not the D's fault. In most levels, it's not. You know, you go down to peewees. Like, the goalie's got to make the save. You leave a guy and you force a guy to stay to the outside lane. Like, if Gaudreau goes all the way down the wall here and he scores from there, like, that shouldn't happen. It's probably not going to happen at this level. But for you as a defenseman, think about that. There's no point in jumping out here and risking. I think being a little bit more conservative in these situations and backing up versus leaping out past the dots is a good lesson for players to understand.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is attacking off entry with speed. And I like to call, like, width and depth. Back in the day, you probably would drop back to create that depth so that you have that triangle attack. But because the game's so fast now and guys back check so well, the depth component of it, the width is there, right? There are three guys wide attacking the on entry, but the depth component just has to be a little bit off of the other player's passing lane, right? So that if you're the weak side, if we're attacking down the ice, left wingers in this scenario, left wingers attacking the blue line with the puck, he has a passing option to the centerman who's driving through. And if I could just throw it sort of off of his backside, off of his heels, would be my other passing option all the way through to Tkachuk, my right winger, right? And in this video, that he lays it through to the middle drive guy who realizes he's under pressure as well. And he sort of just one touches it over to the weak side lane attacking. But just wanted to emphasize the middle drive, the weak side drive, no one's pulling up to be the high guy because you just can't in nowadays.
It ain't happening. Everybody's coming back.
They should be anyways. But the other thing I want to touch on is, I mean, I'm sort of getting good at betting now. I am. I'm sort of getting good at it. Like, it's probably bad news for PointsBet Canada, but I created my own line in game 3 of the Tampa game, and they won, I think, 4-1 or 5-1. So laughing at that. I don't know what I can do about the Calgary-Edmonton series. I don't know what's like. You're Edmonton, I'm going Calgary. But what is constant is that McDavid is getting a lot of points. So the only bet I'm probably going to do in that series or that game is I'm just going to take McDavid on the over on points every game. This guy is on another level. What about you?
I mean, he's getting 7-8 scoring chances, or creating 7-8-9 scoring chances a game. It's insane. Yeah. So it's almost like a sure bet. With that, I agree. What I would say for me personally, what I'd be taking for the next game, I only go one game. I don't do the parlay stuff. I would take Carolina. Carolina absolutely pumped New York, and Shesterkin just stood on his head. He's getting peppered. I know we talked that we didn't think he was so great in the first series in the sense of like standing out or sexy, so to speak, but he's getting peppered, and Carolina peppered him, just came up a little bit short. But I think Carolina I like that game over the New York Rangers, and I'd like it to be, I would take it at -1.5 if I'm betting it.
Now, Carolina is a team that I don't know if I respected them as much as when I don't watch them as much in the regular season, but watching them in playoffs, like these guys all play hard. You can tell they're well coached. Again, you can tell that they are playing for the coach. They like their coach. They have speed and skill and defensive awareness. Their D are active. Like it's a good team, a fun team to watch. And obviously they're without their starting goaltender and still finding ways to succeed. So that's a good bet on your part. I mean, so far, all the games in the playoffs have been great. First round was unbelievable. So far in the second round, you'd like to see, Florida make a little bit more of a series, but for our good buddy in Corey Perry and former alumni in Pat Maroon, it's good to see Tampa doing well and maybe on the verge of another.
You're pulling for that cup party.
Well,
you're pulling for that cup party.
Patty can go five. Was it 5-4 in a row? Yeah. I just want an invite, Pat.
That's what we should get them. We should get PointsBet to put something together for that. What are the odds that Mr. Civrat gets an invite to Patty Maroon's with third cup party?
Well, I think the odds would be easily favored in me getting an invite, like unless I don't know anything, but on Patty's side, but Patty's an awesome dude. I have good conversations with him, really pulling for him. So there's my bet is hopefully Tampa ends up winning it all, but. All right, Shrimpy, good catching up again for week 4 of our Shrimp and Civrette show. Follow us online.
Yes, sir.
At Rob Shrimp, at Danny Civrette, or at the Shrimp and Civrette show. Tune in next week. Love talking hockey, boys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Shrimp and Civrette show. Don't forget to subscribe to the Nation Network YouTube channel to watch all of our video breakdowns.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.